Hello everybody, hello masses of your own destiny, what's going on? Welcome back to my basement. I'm Francisco Suarez, your host, and this is From Suarez Basement, a podcast that creates bridges between you, the audience, and those experts in the communication, media, and the art. You name it, those people who work very hard behind some of your favorite TV shows and films and documentaries, writers, producers. We're talking about artists and musicians. Everybody is here in the basement. FSBasement.com is our home in the internet, where you can find past episodes of our audio and video and all these amazing selection of experts for you to learn from. And today, of course, like every other week, we have a top in the line expert. Sarah Downlet is in the basement. She is a phenomenal documentary filmmaker, but also a phenomenal visual effect producer. We're going to talk about Sarah, not only about her latest documentary film, which she direct and create, Super in the Clutch, which is already available in any platform media that you can find it. Again, Super in the Clutch is the latest documentary of Sarah Downlet. I 100% recommend for you to watch it. And of course, she has been behind some of the amazing visual effects for movies as Harry Potter. So, talking about having an expert in the basement. I cannot wait to start this conversation. But before we go there, of course, I need to thank WCNY PBS in Central New York and Central New York Art for their partnership. Would not be fair to start this new episode without recognizing the two nonprofit organizations that believe in our mission. And those are definitely WCNY PBS in Central New York and Central New York Art. Thank you so much. And remember, fsbasement.com. Just go and visit us, and you can find us in all social media, from TikTok and Instagram, YouTube, you name it, we are everywhere. Let's start this new episode from Suarez Basement with the enthusiasm, with the happiness, with the care that we put in everything that we do here in From Suarez Basement, with our expert of the day, the documentary filmmaker Sarah Downlet. Right away, here we go. Sarah, I want to welcome you to my basement. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this morning.
Thank you for having me on.
No, it's a pleasure. Listen, I'm very fascinated about your career because, you know, I was, of course, doing the research to have this conversation with you. And you have been navigating in the entertainment industry for quite a while in very different things, especially you were what they call a production special effect producer for very well-known movies, from The Matrix to Harry Potter. So I'm very curious to know, how is that from special effects you become now well-known for your documentary filmmaking?
Well, I think all of it is really about storytelling, even the visual effects producing work that I did for 15 years, which was just great. I worked on everything from small independent productions to, as you mentioned, really large scale Hollywood productions and franchises. And all of those experiences taught me about the whole story making process from soup to nuts. So in visual effects, you're one of the teams that is on the film from the very beginning, and you're there at the very, very end as well. A lot of other departments come and go, but visual effects is really there for the entire production cycle. So you really get to see how the sausage gets made from all aspects, from pre-production, when you're filming, of course, and then in post-production, how it gets put together. And it was in that capacity I was working for Framestore in their New York office, and I was running the film department there, and we added a design department, and we really needed a really nice, juicy project for those designers to do as like their first project in New York. And a friend of mine introduced me to a documentary filmmaker, Alex Gibney. He's one of the most prolific documentary filmmakers in the US. I'd obviously seen a lot of his films, and I was very excited at this prospect of working with him. And he had a film called The Story We Steal Secrets, The Story of WikiLeaks. And a lot of that, of course, is about typing exchanges between messages and communications on a computer. And so he needed a way of being able to translate that into storytelling. So the design department jumped in on that job, and we did some fantastic graphics work for that film. And that's how I met Alex. And those meetings that I was having with him were so engaging and fascinating and fantastic to me that I really felt like, oh, this is the thing that I really want to be doing. I want to be doing documentaries again. And I say again because that's what I actually did when I first finished my university degree in Australia. I did documentaries first. Obviously, you know, working as a production assistant, whatever I was doing, grabbing cups of tea and coffee, probably. But that just felt like, okay, this is a full circle moment. And I had an opportunity to then go and work on a film as his producer. And that film was called Zero Days. And that was about cyber warfare. And so, again, he really needed somebody who understood how to take graphics and visual effects and all of the technologies to translate that into some storytelling. So that's how it kind of happened in terms of the journey, I guess, that I took from visual effects into documentary. And then after Zero Days, really the kind of graphics or visual effects component wasn't really a feature then of any of the documentaries I was doing. To that, it was more journalistic. It was more really looking into stories and characters and being able to sort of tell those stories from a very different perspective than from generating graphics.
And listen, before we move to documentary filmmaking, which I'm fascinated about it, I teach a class in documentary filmmaking. But I'm also fascinated. Well, I'm fascinated with everything that have to do with visual storytelling. You name it, that's what this podcast is all about, right? It's about having this conversation with experts like you that are bringing stories to us through visual and audio, for sure. But the visual effect, of course, catch my attention. And now that these podcasts have an educational component, let's try to define, because a lot of my students and a lot of students out there and a lot of our audience always say, well, what is visual effect? Right? What is that component? Because, we tend to say, well, visual effect is the guy who say, okay, 1, 2, 3, explosion, and we have an explosion, right? Or we have... So, right. Define to me what could be categorized as a visual effect.
So a visual effect is really anything that's computer generated. So it's a digital thing. But that doesn't mean that it's not made up of practical components. So if in the example that you used, and actually I did a lot of these in the Matrix films, where we would go and film explosions because at that time anyway, it was much better to actually do certain kinds of effects as practical physical effects, as they've always been filmed in camera. That personally is still my preference, that you shoot as much as you can with a real camera, with a real camera lens, and then you add on top of that in composites and you put those elements. So maybe in the Matrix, like we shot a lot of explosions against big green screens, like, but they were huge, like big outdoor sets with big screens, and we would go and, you know, blow things up, film that at high speed, and then take that element into the digital realm and then put that on a back ground or put that on a building or whatever it was that we were actually exploding, we would then add that component. So the physical effect or what I guess I think of as a special effect is the physical one, the tangible practical thing you film on a camera. And then the visual effect is the one that you generate digitally, and it has digital components that actually make up the finished elements or shot.
It would be impossible to have somebody of your category with all your experience and not try to touch a little bit about AI.
not that I want to go there. I want to talk about, of course, your latest documentary in some point, but, you know, you work, you say visual effects is everything generated by a computer, and we talk about AI is hot in these days, like they call it, the kids call it, it's a hot topic. And of course, to me, when I see now a lot of shows in extreme, last night I started watching Avatar, The Last Generation, I don't remember right now, but in Netflix, fascinated. I mean, the setting, the way they can produce in these days is amazing. Landscapings and universe that we can submerge in. What is your approach to AI as a person who works so many times in visual effects? Are we going to a point where studios will say, you know what, it's cheaper for me to just run the entire show through AI? Will be a point where we start watching shows that are fully produced in AI?
I don't know the answer to that, but I guess the way that I think about it is it's another creative tool. And maybe because I spent a long time in visual effects and I am deeply fond of visual effects and I you know, have a real soft spot for that in terms of the people that are in it, how hard they work. I have a lot of respect for it as a creative way of telling stories. And I just see AI as something that is like the next progression from that. So, yes, we may see, you know, full AI shows, you know, or at least commercials or music clips, or maybe it will sort of start there in kind of shorter form and then we'll see it evolve. But I just kind of feel like I'm not worried about it. I feel like, okay, that's just another tool that we will have, and there will be people that will master it and be very creative with it, and they will know how to use it. And of course, there are issues, especially around IP and around jobs and those types of things. And they're real issues. And I think as long as those things are also getting addressed, because certainly with visual effects, you know, and I guess it depends which camp you come from in terms of whether you're for unions or not for unions, and not to take this in a sort of political direction, but the visual effects community got left out of the union bargaining. So that's why you often see, you know, credits are right down the back of a film. Maybe you don't even watch that far. There's nothing there that really protects those workers. Takes credits for them and you know, other things in terms of their employment. So, you know, if it's going to be a progression with AI, perhaps, you know, those aspects of the industry could also be reflected upon to determine, like, what would be the most successful way forward. I'm not sort of in it enough to advocate one way or the other, but just that it might be something that is thought about before it becomes a kind of runaway train.
It makes sense. You are a filmmaker, a documentary filmmaker, but you were able to work also in what you call fictional, you know, storytelling. In your opinion, what are the two differences between these two worlds, right? Because the beauty of talking to you is that you know these two worlds quite well. What is in the creative process, you think, the biggest difference between the fictional storytelling and non-fictional, which is in this case is documentary filmmaking?
Oh, for me, absolutely. It's that the fictional world is made up and that you can write around problems. So you can write things in or write them out, and that you have that option and flexibility at all times. If I'm working on a documentary, I can't change an aspect of something that has happened and is a fact, or what somebody has done or not done in their life. And in the instance of the film that I just completed, Sue Bird in the Clutch, in that film, you know, Sue's record, what she's done as a pro basketball player, her legacy, what she's created on and off the court, like those are things that, you know, I can't change. They're things that I can, you know, decide to highlight or not highlight, and how I tell the story in a documentary. I can certainly choose what type of narrative I want to tell, but I still am dealing with, you know, a physical real person that exists, you know, and her personality is is what it is. Her skills as a player are what they are. You know, these are, you know, not things that can be changed. But fiction, you know, if something's not working, or you're working on a scene and it's really just not coming together, or there's not a big enough payoff or whatever it is, you can just change the elements around. So it's fine. You can fix it.
Narrative is the only process for a documentary filmmaker that can actually control. But I'm always fascinated, and I want to hear your opinion. When you approach a new project, you could think that you're going to be doing a documentary about, I don't know, drug dealers in the border between Mexico and the US. But suddenly you get there and you start filming, and 6 months later you realize, oh, this is not really about drug dealers. This is about, is that happened to you? And how do you confront that process where suddenly you realize, okay, this documentary is more about something else, and change your narrative?
Yeah, I think that happens frequently, actually, because at the beginning, when you're doing a documentary, at least for me, I'll have an idea of like what the story is and what it is that I, you know, what my view is on it, like what I want to sort of say about it. But you have to become a mini expert in whatever that topic is. And until you are there and filming, and as you're filming, you're also researching, you're reading a lot, you're talking to more people, you're conducting interviews, you're doing that deep dive work. And as you go through that process, things start to, you know, come to you in terms of your understanding deepens. And as you go through that, then you realize, oh, okay, I might have to kind of change course here, or I thought I was going to tell the story one way, but actually if I want to really draw something, you know, something to the viewer's attention, I think I'm going to have to come at it differently. I mean, even in the film that I just mentioned, Sue Bird in the Clutch, you know, that's about a basketball player, and in a way, you know, what she's done in her career is set. But the more I got to film her at games, see her fans interact with her, see her teammates interact with her, conduct interviews and really do a deep dive in terms of who she is as a person. And then as I started to research the larger world that she operates in terms of, you know, being in a professional league, the WNBA, I realized that, oh, you know, her story is really, it's a coming of age story, because, you know, she is in the league for 20 years. In that time, it's the league's coming of age story too. It's almost like I could layer on her story over the league story, and we could see this kind of progression that was happening. So I don't think I had a coming of age story necessarily in my mind when I started the film. I was very much thinking about, okay, so how, you know, I've got this arc of the final year that she's going to be playing basketball. I knew that that was going to form the spine of the story. That was my ticking clock. This was the last season. That was the drama of it. And that was what I went into thinking about. But the more I got into it, the more I thought, oh, no, this is a coming of age story. Now I understand the lens that I need to use in the edit when I put this together.
It's funny. My next question was about Sue Bird and the Cross, in the sense of what is the story, you know, define a little bit what the documentary is, but what is the documentary really about? And you already actually kind of give me that information. For upcoming documentary filmmakers, what is your creative approach when you start a new project, kind of a step-by-step, you know, a synopsis of how you approach a project? And, of course, the business aspect of it, right? I mean, we all would like, in this case, Sue Bird and the Clutch is available in Apple TV and Amazon, and so it's a business aspect of it. How easy is, I guess, for new upcoming documentary filmmaker to make it into the industry, to see the possibility, to see their actual documentary in one of these stream platforms?
Okay. So creatively, the process I've taken anyway is either a project is brought to me, or I'm bringing a project to a production company or to a streamer or to a network. And in all of those instances, what will be key will be access. So do you have access to the subject that you want to profile, or maybe you're going to examine a very large subject, like maybe it's policing or something like that, right? That you decide you want to look at, and you've got some access to people who are in the police, who can tell you about their experiences, what they have to go through day to day, what they're dealing with week to week, you know, just what their organization is all about. So that's, you're going to have to sort of bring those key ingredients to the table. So for me, either I have been asked to produce or direct, if I'm interested in producing or directing on a particular project, or I'm generating it myself because I'm, you know, there's topics or ideas or stories that I read, something that's kind of rolling around in my head all the time that I think, you know what, that would make a really good documentary. Like we need to have something about this, you know, out there. There's nothing, there's no story being told about this, and we should have that. So for projects that I have on at the moment, those are ones that I'm generating. So I'm coming up with the creative ideas and establishing the outreach to the key characters and seeing if they are willing to actually be part of a documentary, because that's a huge thing to decide if you want to commit to giving a director access to you, your life, your world, your work, your family, whatever it entails. So far before I would go and sort of try to sell this as an idea to anyone, I need to be absolutely rock solid that I have that access. It's not just something that I'm hoping to get, but something that I tangibly have. I also then would create a deck. So not a long deck, because executives get pitched by a lot of filmmakers and they're very busy. So you need it to be short, and you need it to just really go through the core elements of the idea. So, you know, really the who, what, you know, where, why type of,
right,
you know, questions, those very standard journalistic questions, but you need to know them. So you need to have a synopsis of your film. You need to figure out what's the most compelling thing about your film. Is it, you know, one of the characters? Like what's the hook that will make somebody, you know, want to look at your deck as opposed to the next one, or just flip over the page or whatever it is?
Of course, I want to go back to Sue Bird and In the Clutch, because it's your latest project. It's a fantastic film. It's available again in the stream. Let's recap a little bit. What is the film about? It? How do you, not only what it's about, but how do you got the interest in creating this film, in producing this film?
So, well, let me start with what the film is about. So Sue Bird had a 21-year career as the best point guard in history for women's basketball. And I can say that because she is the winniest player in the women's league. She has won four championships in the WNBA. She's a 13 by All-Star. She's won 5 Olympic gold medals. That's more than any of the guys, by the way, for those listening. So she really has had a prolific career. And even in her college career, since college basketball is just huge at the moment, you know, she herself has won 2 NCAA championships there as well. So she really is prolific. But the reason, or the key reason we wanted to make this film about Sue, is that prior to her, women in the pros did not play for an entire career. They tended on average to play for about 6 years or less, because there just really was no pathway or no way of sustaining a career. They get paid a fraction, the women. I get paid a fraction of what the men do. So the women have to kind of cobble together this experience of how to sustain themselves over an entire year. And so they play, you know, their season is short. It's only like four and a half months, depending on how long you go into the playoffs. So the rest of the year, they play overseas. And some people might remember the story about Brittany Griner, who plays for the Phoenix Mercury. She was detained in Russia. And that kind of spotlighted, I think, for a lot of people who didn't know that, oh, hold on a minute, why do American basketball players, why do the women go and play overseas? Like, what are they doing over there playing for another country? And that is why. It's really been financially driven for them. So Sue was really one of the first players to have this long career and create this pathway for other women coming through who could now go, okay, actually, I can see myself as this professional athlete for my entire career, not just for a few years out of college. So that was very important to tell that story. It was also coming at a time that we were seeing films about a lot of male athletes, and audiences were really resonating with them. They're great films, and not just about you know basketball, but you know in all sports. And they're great films, and people love that kind of storytelling. They do like to know about their heroes, their sporting heroes. And we felt like, look, Sue should be a bigger name than she is. So given all the things that she's won and all the things that she's done for the game, she deserves and she can carry a film that is based on her. So that was really, you know, that's really the story, and that's how I kind of got into it. And I had also just come off doing a two-part documentary that I had produced on the opioids crisis. And I was working on that throughout the pandemic. And that was a really, it was a very necessary film to work on. And I traveled all over America to work on that, filming in communities everywhere, just the sheer devastation. And after that, I really knew I needed, just for my own soul and spirit, I needed to work on something very uplifting. And Sue's story, as soon as I started reading about her, I was just fascinated by, you know, her ability and her grit and how inspirational she is. And so I just felt like this was absolutely the perfect project for me at the perfect time. So really, really grateful that I got an opportunity to work on this.
You know, I always like to kind of close with my guests about, if you could title your own documentary about you, what do you think would be the title of that documentary?
Oh, that's a really tough one. Because, you know, normally I hate titles. Like I, you know, in terms of that, it's always difficult to come up with a title.
It is always difficult. It is true.
I think it would have to be, let's see. I think it would have to be, you know, maybe Journey Woman, because I feel, you know, I'm Australian, but I moved to the UK. I lived there for a while in London. I then moved to New York, and I've lived in America for nearly 20 years. And I just feel like the whole thing has been one fantastic journey. And I just hope that keeps going. And, you know, I like to try different things. So, you know, hopefully maybe the next thing is going to be something that ties scripted and unscripted together, and who knows where that will be.
Right. I love the title. It's actually not that bad. It's fantastic. Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us today.
Thank you so much. And I just love that you teach this subject too to students. So
I think we have very good potential documentary filmmaking in the making, and again, I think the stream media has allowed also the documentary world to expand in a ways that we never thought about it. Right? I mean, before, documentaries were showing in movie theaters, and of course, was very not usual people to go and see it. But now, we consume documentaries. There are really good documentaries out there through the stream.
Yeah, that's right. And I love that. It does, you know, open it up to a lot more filmmakers, and that's what we need is that diversity and just to be hearing from different voices and getting, you know, a sense of their worlds and what's important to them and what interests them. I love that.